Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I am honored to welcome six-time Wall Street Journal and New York Times bestselling author Larry Winget back to Your Partner in Success Radio. What a great way to finish out 2013. Larry is a member of the International Speaker Hall of Fame. He has starred in his own television series, which I watched, by the way. That's how I came across his books and started following him, and appeared in national television commercials. Larry is a regular contributor on many news shows on the topics of money, personal success, and business. I often watch him on Neil Cavuto. Through humor and sarcasm, he teaches universal principles that will work for anyone, in any business, at any time. And sharing his views on handling challenges in life and business, he encourages listeners and viewers to lighten up, take responsibility, and keep everything in perspective. And today we are going to delve into Larry's newest book, Grow a Pair, How to Stop Being a Victim and Take Back Your Life, Your Business, and Your Sanity. Larry, welcome. Merry Christmas to you and yours. And thank you so much for being with me here today.
Oh, I always have a good time. Thanks for having me back on.
Oh, I love chatting with you. You are honestly one of my all-time favorite people in the whole world. And I'm not just saying that. I rarely say things I don't mean, and you know that.
So you sometimes say things you don't mean? Is that what you're telling me?
I almost never do. You know me. I have no filters. I'm often apologizing for something I might have said. But I'm so glad you're here. Now, listen, I want to talk with you about your book, but before we get started, tell people who may not know who you are, which I find remarkable, but tell our audience who you are and where they can find you.
Oh, I'm pretty easy to find. You did a good job in the introduction explaining who I am. I'm a six-time best-selling author. I'm on lots of television shows. I'm a regular on Fox News and do several shows there, mostly Cavuto and Fox and Friends and a couple of others. I have a real presence on social media. I'm easy to find on Facebook, where the discussions are lively and interactive, as you will have to agree with me on that, because I see your face and name pop up every once in a while. And that's just Larry Winget fan page on Facebook. But anybody wants to find out more about who I am, just go to LarryWinget.com, just WINGET.com. And you can watch videos of me about anything you'd like to know about me. You'll be able to find out right there.
Well, that's true on Facebook. And I have to tell you, I don't think I've told you this before. I work with a lot of authors and speakers. You know, I build their websites, and I, you know, talk to them about building their platform. And I always use you. I say, listen, you want to find out how to do it? Go follow Larry's fan page. Get over there. Watch what he's doing. And interact, talk with people, have conversations. Excuse me, I have a little insurrection going on in my office assistants here. And I will tell people that, just go follow Larry. You want to build a platform, you want to build an audience, do what he does. And they're like, okay, and off they go.
Well, I appreciate that. I think the biggest mistake people make who want to be in this business or want to build a following is that they post something and then they never interact with the people who follow them. And I have more people say that yours is the only page, Larry, where you actually talk to us. And I do talk to people. If I'm not working or on the road, if I post something controversial, I don't just throw it out there and let it set and let people stew over it. I'll fight with people about it. I'll agree with people. We make it interactive and lively.
Mm-hmm. And I tell them that. You know, I say, listen, watch what he's doing, because he is actually talking with people. I mean, there's an awful lot going on, and I will tell everybody who will listen to me, that's not Larry's assistant. That's Larry you're chatting with.
Yeah, that's really me.
Right. And if you want to have any kind of a platform, whether you're an author or a speaker, you own a gym, whatever it is, You need to be out there talking with people who are listening to you, paying attention to you, or wanting to fight with you. You have got to actually get in the trenches and interact with them. So I really think you do one of the best jobs on social media that I've ever seen.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean it, too. So listen, we're going to talk about Grow a Pair, and I've got it here on my desk. I mean, it's a fantastic book. But, Larry, this is not just a book with a bombastic title, is it?
No, I believe it's certainly a book that's very timely. I write all of my books based on what I see going on in the world and what bothers me the most. I was looking at all the problems we've got in our country, and I said, you know, it really comes down to bad parenting. So I wrote a book called Your Kids, Your Own Fault. I saw people having lots of money problems, and so I wrote a book, You're Broke Because You Want to Be. And this book came along because it just looked to me like we had become a huge society of entitled weenies and wimps who didn't know who we were, didn't know what we believed in, weren't willing to stand up for what we believed in, and didn't know how to do that any longer. We've got companies who are being run by bad employees because managers don't have a pair and don't know how to fire people or train people or educate people or communicate with people. We've got families where the 8-year-old are running the family because the parents don't have enough of a pair to actually step in and discipline their kids. And so I decided it was time to tell people it was, you know, appropriate to grow a pair, learn what you believe in, stand up for yourself, stand up to others, do the right thing, build your life and your business on honesty and integrity, and don't give a damn what anybody thinks about it. Just do what you believe is right.
Right. And listen, I know what you're talking about with these 8-year-olds. I hate going into a restaurant because of kids. The parents won't take care of it. The waiters just, you know, walk around a little kid throwing a fit in the aisle. When I'm in a restaurant, I hear
when
kids,
Back in the day, they had smoking and non-smoking section.
Right.
I would always say non-children.
Exactly.
Not that I don't love kids.
I love kids.
I'd rather go eat with, when my kids were 5 years old, I'd rather go to a restaurant with them than most adults because they knew how to behave better than most adults.
Right.
But the problem is most parents don't teach their kids. And I never blame the little kid. I blame the parents. I get frustrated with mamas and daddies who aren't doing their job to teach kids how to act in a restaurant or out in public.
Well, you know, I was reading the book again last night. I've read it several times. I keep picking it up and pulling little tidbits out of it because there's just so much common sense that can be either translated as wisdom or wisdom translated as common sense. I mean, I think they're both kind of identical in purpose. But one of the things that you were talking about in your book, and I'm paraphrasing, is that people won't stand up and say something when they see something wrong that, you know, I mean, really wrong that somebody's doing. Just in it sent me back a few years when I was in a parking lot. I was getting into my car, and I see these two girls open up their windows and just start tossing out Pepsi cans and filthy diapers. Larry, I didn't even think about it, and I thought about you when I had this memory. I walked over, I picked the stuff up, I tapped on their window, and I handed it back to them.
Yeah.
And I remember the look of absolute shock on their face, and I caught myself wondering, was it shock because I handed them their filth back, or did they honestly not know that they were doing something that was just fouling the area around them? I still don't know. I didn't stop to talk to them about it. I just handed it back to them and walked off. But I catch myself wondering now what really shocked them. Was it both or one or the other?
Well, see, I think that's what more people need to do. I think it's and if you don't do things like that, I think you're almost as guilty as they are. You become an accessory to the crime at that point. When we've gotten to the point, as we have, where we go in and pay $20 to see a movie, and we sit there and we let people around us talk or text on their phones or make noise, and we don't do anything about it, we don't turn around and say, shut up, you're ruining this for me and for everybody else. When we walk down the street and watch people throw their trash down and we don't speak up and say, excuse me, and that makes us guilty too. I think that we've got to start speaking up for what's right. And if just think if we had one day where every single person did that, held others accountable. Now, believe me, I think it all starts with you. You got to, first of all, be accountable. You got to be the right kind of person. So clean up your own backyard first. But then what if we just held everybody else accountable just for one day? Our world would change. It would look different.
No, I agree. But Larry, do you think that people, and this kind of goes back to early education, I guess, what your parents teach you or what you learn, you know, from your peer group, but sometimes people honestly don't know that they're being little pigs. And I use that word deliberately.
Well, that's going to mall, that's what bothers me the most. And I spend a lot of time in airports. You can go in an airport to a food court area where people will buy their food, go over and sit down at the tables, and walk away, leave their trash all over the table, and never even think about walking over there. I did this the other day at an airport, walked up to a family who was walking away, and I was trying to find a place to sit down, and I said, excuse me, did you want me to clean up your table? And they all just looked at me, and I said, I'm not cleaning up your table. I'd like to sit here. Pick up your trash. Go put it in the trash can. It's not 6 feet away from you. Don't be a pig. And they all looked at me like I was an idiot, and the kids walked over and picked up the trash while Mom and Daddy walked away.
I'll be darned. I'm glad the kids listened to you. That gives them some hope, I think, to me, was a signal
that nobody had ever told those kids what to do before.
Right. That's exactly right. And then I'm sure the parents got in the car and complained bitterly about you for an hour.
Yeah, like that really upset me.
I'm sure. I know. I can tell it broke your heart.
Yeah, you've got to get it. See, that's one of the problems. We live so much searching for validation from other people. First of all, you're not going to get it. I don't care what you stand for. Somebody's going to hate you for it. You know, Jesus stood for loving others, and they killed him for it. So it doesn't matter what you stand for. You better be prepared. There's going to be a big segment of society who doesn't like you for it. It's going to hate you for it. That's the way it is. And so I don't need other people's validation. I'm the one who has to look myself in the eye and said, I've lived the best life I can today. I didn't make everybody happy. I didn't try to make everybody happy. I made myself happy. And people say, well, isn't that selfish and self-centered and hedonistic? You damn right it is. I want to know, and in fact, I'm positive of this, I want to know that I've done my very best, because I know when I've been the best version of Larry Wingate that I can be, that's when I've been good for other people. I don't live to make other people happy. I live to make myself happy. And when you've got a good, strong moral core, when you have a responsibility and honesty and integrity and a work ethic, if you make yourself, when you set such a high standard for yourself and you make yourself happy living to that high standard, you will be serving others well.
Oh, I agree. You know, we had this same conversation, something very similar, the very first chat that you and I had. And I've never forgotten it, because that's when you told me in that, Larry, that little post-it note that I wrote at the time of that first interview 2 or 3 years ago, whenever it was, is still stapled to my board. And what you said to me that was so critical, because I knew it, but I hadn't been able to really formulate what it was that what you think of me is really none of my business. And honestly, you were able to spell out to me in one conversation what I always knew and the way I've always lived my life. I just wasn't able somehow to articulate it. So
I appreciate that. I'd like to take credit for that line. That's a pretty famous book, everybody should read that. But, you know, what we really do have to get above the approval of other people and just approve of ourselves at the end of the day. I got to be able to look myself at the eye and say, Larry, you've been a good version of Larry Wingate today. You've been a good human being. You did your best. And then be satisfied with it and start again tomorrow.
Exactly. I have to ask you, though, while we're on the topic of kids and kind of entitled society, I may be opening up a little can of worms here, but what do you think about that kid who got off on the affluenza verdict?
Well, I did a story the other day on Fox News about affluenza, and, you know, first of all, it's a sad commentary on society where we make being affluent a disease. It's also a really crappy thing to generalize parents who have worked hard and become successful and now are affluent to say that those parents don't teach their children to be responsible. That's unfair to people who are successful. The other thing it does is it drives a huge wedge between the haves and the have-nots. So the people who have not done as well, they get to sit back and say, look, if I had money, the world would be more fair to me. So that's not right either. The other thing it does is that it creates more disrespect for our legal system, because in this case, our legal system was incredibly stupid. And so there are a lot of problems and a lot of pieces in here that are really going to, moving forward, put us in a bad place. But what I like to remind people of, being responsible has nothing to do with how much money you have. Good parenting has nothing to do with how much money you have or don't have. Those things have nothing to do with affluence or success or money. It has to do with your basic moral core.
Now, what if people – look, I watched a little bit of that. It pained me. It really did. I came away thinking this kid is probably a little psychopath.
Well, this kid's basically been abandoned by his parents. They bought him a mansion. He gets to live there by himself, do what he wants to do. He's had a total lack of direction. I get all that. It's not an excuse. I get it. Yeah. I feel sorry for the kid that his parents never stepped in and really parented him. I'm not sure whether he's psychopathic or not, but I tell you what, I hold the kid responsible for what he did for sure. But the overall outcome, I hold that judge totally responsible for saying,
exactly,
that's a crap excuse. I'm not taking that. I'm throwing that out. You and your attorney are idiots. We're not accepting that, and holding this kid responsible. How the kid got there, I mean, face it, we are never going to know. But as a result of the kid being there, we do have the legal authority to step in and make sure it doesn't happen again and to impose consequences on this kid.
Well, I'll be curious to see what happens going forward, because I know they're trying to either rework other charges or find...
Yeah, they're going to overturn it.
Yeah, well, it has to be overturned. It's just not right. But, and that kind of takes me into my next question, which is, and I see you talking about this all the time, I talk about it, political correctness. Larry, it drives me crazy what we're allowed to say, what we're not allowed to say. And my attitude is, yeah, watch me. You cannot censor me. You're not allowed. The only person who can censor me is me. And I'll be honest with you, I don't do a real good job of that. So, you know, political correctness, I would love for you to talk about that a bit.
I think it's probably the most castrating thing that's ever happened to our society is political correctness. You know, we've gotten to the point. I watched a woman the other day on television, and her friends had told her she was a liar, and she said, "That's not fair. I'm truth challenged, but don't call me a liar." Truth challenged? Lady, if you're not telling the truth, you're just a liar. That's the way it is. But we've come up with all these cute little words. You can no longer to say that people are fat. You're supposed to use other words like they're chubby or they're oversized. No, I'm sorry. If you're fat, you're fat. If you're stupid, you're stupid. It's kind of like I'm bald. I'm comfortable with the fact that I'm bald. I have zero hair. I'm not follically challenged.
It's inverted. It's there. It's just inverted.
It's almost funny to the point that it's sad, the lengths that we have gone to. You know, I did a story yesterday on the news about the Southern Illinois University coach who they wanted to apologize for saying that his team were mama's boys for not doing a good job on the court and for him yelling and doing a rant and saying that his wife shot better baskets than his best guys did. And they want him to apologize. And I debated with a psychologist yesterday, and she was saying this: what he did was shame his players. Calling them mama boys is now considered shaming them. This woman obviously didn't grow up where I grew up and never had a coach like I ever had.
No.
You know, we become so sensitive. And we had one of his players was immediately texting all of his friends and his parents saying, "He called me a mama's boy. That's not fair." Well, if you had to text your mama to tell her about it, chances are, buddy, you're a mama's boy.
Exactly. And I have a real problem with the term "it's not fair." I just don't understand. I really don't why people need to trot that out. You know, if something happens to you that you don't like, evaluate it, assess it, and go do something about it. or go, meh, and walk off from it. Fair doesn't come
well,
into
life
it.
Isn't fair. And
no,
anybody
it's not.
Who told you it would be fair, they were an idiot and they lied to you. Life is rarely fair. It just doesn't work that way. Life is just what it is. Sometimes you can do everything right and it all goes wrong. And sometimes you can do everything wrong and it all goes right. It's not fair. It's just called life. Deal with it.
Right. It's a journey. I mean, you have to be able to be agile. You have to be able to accept what's happening. And then if you don't like what's happening, find a plan to get away from what's happening. You know, your thoughts are your own. You have to think them and you have to do something about them. I don't think it's fair, let's go ahead and use that hated word, to expect me to fix your life. I won't do it. I won't even
well,
try.
Well, that's why I don't participate in any of that. You know, I stand on stage. I just did a big meeting a couple of weeks ago where I was teaching people, and it was a long, intensive, not what I typically do. It was an intensive couple of days with people. And I said, let me be real clear. I don't give a damn about you people. I'm not responsible for you. I don't care whether you walk out of this room and become successful. It's not my job to make sure that you're happy or successful or make money or any of these things. That's not what I'm here to do. I'm not responsible for you. You have paid me, and I am responsible to you. There's a big difference there. Mm-hmm. I'm responsible to give people my very best, especially when I have been paid to give people my very best. But it is a professional relationship where I honor the fact that there has been an exchange of money for my talents. And that tells me, because I honor that exchange so much, I'll give them everything it takes. Now, I can't be responsible for whether they walk out of the room and do it or not, or use it or not. And we have so many people that say, I care so much about you that I'd really want you to be successful. No, you don't. Be honest. And besides, I had some friends the other day accuse me. They said, Larry, you don't care anything about taking care of people. And I said, you're absolutely right. I don't care anything about taking care of people. I want to put my money into my time and my efforts into teaching people to take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Big difference there.
Big, big difference. It's kind of like the fish and the loaves. I mean, you can't make people do what they're not going to do natively or naturally anyway. They have to take their own responsibility. And listen, I've been watching what's going on in our country for the last couple of decades. For a while, it broke my heart. Now I'm just mad. I mean,
yeah,
I'm mad
about it too, it still breaks my heart in a way. But what it's also done to me, and I think a lot of other people in society, is just step back and say, I can't fix this. It's broken, and I can't fix it. I care, and it's broken, but I can't fix it, so what I'm going to do is take care of myself.
Well,
and
I think
that's what you have to do.
Right. And, you know, Larry, you do an extraordinary job of leading by example. And honestly, to me, that's the only way to lead.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do. I'm honored that you would say that. I just try to do the right thing for Larry Wingate every single day. Other people get to do the right thing for them every single day. And as long as what they do doesn't infringe on me, I don't give a damn what they do. Really, that's the way I look at it.
I'm libertarian
to the core in that way. You do your thing, I'll do my thing. As long as you don't infringe upon me and my rights, and I'm good with whatever you want to do.
But, you know, I love that you say that, but for me, and I have to say, it's not fair, Larry, because I'm a girl, and when I do exactly what Larry Wingate does, I get called bad words, just so you know. It's not fair.
Well, you should read my mail. My goodness, you talk about bad words and the things people say to me. Remember, I've had death threats. I know.
Well, I haven't had that, but I've had people look at me like, what did you just say? And I'll repeat it just in case they didn't catch it the first time. But you know,
oh, yeah, I do too. I want to make sure I've been clear. When people
That's
say,
right.
what? I go, was I not clear the first time? Let me go over it a little slower for you this time. You're an idiot.
Right. Too subtle? I know. But one of the things that you've done by example, and I don't know if you want to talk about this. You're welcome to say, hey, no, but you're pretty clear about it on Facebook. I mean, you started talking, you know, when we started having this financial meltdown about really taking care of your money, which is very important. And you actually downsized your house. I mean, you walked the walk.
No, I don't have any problem talking about that. I mean,
okay.
Yeah, I wrote about it in the book. I'm very open about the fact that I reached a point in my life that I no longer had anything to prove, and I had a huge house, and it was terrific. But I just said, this is it's silly. It's dumb. I don't know the direction the economy's going to go. I don't need this much right now. I would be better off downsizing and having a bigger stash of cash on hand as a result of that. I don't have a lot of faith in the way the economy is headed, and people think that we're in a recovery. Well, the recovery's awfully slow, and it could really, I mean, I really think it's fairly volatile right now, but and it could go any direction. So, yeah, I downsized my life, simplified my life. I don't know anybody in the whole world a penny, and I've done all that. I'm not one of those crazy doomsday prepper guys, but, you know, if the world collapsed tomorrow, I could make it a good long while, never leaving my door. So.
Well, you've got your brandy and your cigars stashed, right?
I got the whiskey and the cigars, and I got a year's worth of food, and I got lots of gasoline, and I got guns and ammo and all that stuff. I'm ready.
Oh, my. Guns and ammo? Larry, shame. Shame on you.
Oh, I know. Good old redneck Oki who still believes I have the right to the Second Amendment, see?
Yeah, you and me both. Listen, and another thing that you have talked about, you know, over time, and these are all things in your books, and I invite everybody listening to us to read your books. In fact, I have one shelf on my bookcase that's just Larry Wingate and Bob Berg and a few other people.
Well,
like you guys have your own shelf. But you also, one of the things that you have done, again, and this is when I'm talking with authors and speakers, I always bring you up. Your ears really ought to be burning because I'll say, listen, Larry is a world-renowned speaker. He is an author. He's all over the place. But he, when he started seeing which way the economy was going, he made some very smart moves and started bringing in other streams of income, A Year of Success, the different things that you're up to. And I don't see other people really doing that. And would you mind kind of chatting about that a little bit?
Well, in my business for many, many years, and a lot of speakers are in the same boat I was in. They just didn't make the shift. Meetings started drying up. I mean, there are just not as many physical meetings where they bring speakers across the country to speak to their people. There's still a lot of them going on, and I do my share, but there's not as many as there used to be. So I knew that my personal economy was going to take a shift. I could see that happening when meetings started on the downtrend. So I also am smart enough to say people don't buy books like they used to buy books, and they don't buy them in the same way that they used to buy them. So the book thing is going to change. That whole the way people buy books, how much money you're going to get paid to write a book, all that's going to change. It had to change.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, one of the biggest problems with success is success. You know, you ride on that success's coattails for so long, and that's what so many people were doing, because things were so good for speakers and authors and so forth. And I could just see that trend was not going to last. And I think anybody in any business has to pay attention, and most of them don't. They're just, especially when they're successful, that's when they become lazy. And so when I saw the trend starting to take a shift, I said, I need to figure out more ways to make money passively. Something I don't have to leave my house, don't have to get on the road, and that's a good thing for me because I'm too old and mean to travel like I used to. I've spent 250 days a year on the road for 20 years, and it's just not what it used to be. So I did start looking at ways to earn more money through the Internet and creating Internet-based learning systems. I have a new system out right now that's a virtual training system at Larry Wingate VT, virtual training, LarryWingateVT.com, where, you know, people pay $17 a month, and it's all interactive again with me jumping in and giving you little tests and questions, and, you know, it's hours and hours of learning on a variety of topics. So that was one. I did A Year of Success, A Year of Business Success with other people. Those kinds of things where I could make money without having to go out and get on a plane and go to somebody and speak, because it's just changing. And so, yeah, I think that's my advice to anybody in any business is say, what are alternate streams of income that I can start to explore?
Well, and it's easy for people to start making that money and doing the book tours. And again, I'm speaking authors and speakers because that is a large segment of my client base. And a lot of them are just in full meltdown mode or heading in that direction because they don't know what to do to say, okay, you know, the speaker gigs are drying up. I don't know if I have another book in me right now. There's just a lot of panic. And honestly, Larry, you probably owe me some commissions. I'm always pointing people at you. Go to study Larry Wingate. Study Larry Wingate. I'm telling you, I can't do it as well as he does. Go watch what he does and, you know, gain some inspiration from what Larry's doing. Because he's not just waiting for somebody to call him and say, hey, do you want to come speak at Under Armour? I mean, you're out there doing all kinds of things that that quite honestly, and this is my view as an online marketer and entrepreneur, you have greatly expanded your base from just corporate gigs or, you know, writing the books. Now you're leveraging a whole new audience, which I think is brilliant.
I went from a business-to-business audience years ago, which is what most speakers have, to I created a retail audience. And when you create a retail audience, you have to constantly be doing whatever you can to increase the size of your following. And so every single day, that's why the social media that I have is so interactive, to draw more people in so I'll have more people to market to. It's just a smart way to do business. It's a smart to look around and say, where are people and who are the people that are similar to me yet different enough that I could access their base, they could access my base, we could both make some money. And so that's why I formed a few coalitions with a few of my close trusted, and that's the thing, you don't just go into business with other people because of a reciprocal. I don't do reciprocals, but you do find people that you trust and trust you and that you've known for a long time and you know their material and you know that they wouldn't ever embarrass you with your client base if you shared them and their information, and you wouldn't embarrass them if they shared you with their base. And so you build some coalitions that way so everybody can win.
Good advice. I mean, that's great advice because so many people say, oh, well, you know, this is a big name in internet marketing. I must partner with them. No, not necessarily.
No, that happens way too often. And the deal is they know how to take advantage of your base. That's why they are a big deal in internet marketing.
Sometimes. You're right.
And so when you turn your names over to them, you're probably going to end up the short end of the stick on that deal. Now, I don't do reciprocals because, and I get a lot of offers that say, Larry, let me promote your book, and then when my book comes out, you can promote mine. No, I don't want to play that way. You promote my book if you like my book. And then you send me your book, and if I like your book and I think your book would fit with my base, I'll be happy to promote your book. But I don't want to create a deal based on you do mine and I'll do yours, because what if you write something that I am absolutely diametrically opposed to in my belief system, or that I know will alienate a portion of my base if I recommend it? That wouldn't do me any good at all. So I suggest that people be real careful of reciprocals in any business.
Oh, I agree. And that leads me kind of back to one of your chapters. It's titled, and Grow a Pair in Business. Page 91, Grow a Pair in Business. A lot of what we've been talking about is, you know, has been kind of covered. Talk about that chapter a bit, if you don't mind, because we're both business people, and I think a lot more people, and we've talked about this too before, Larry. I think this is the age of entrepreneurism. I think that people are going to step up, step out of their corporate jobs or be forced out of their corporate jobs or whatever it is that's happening, and take command of their own life and their own fortunes. And I genuinely believe that entrepreneurism will help us out of the financial messes that we're in. So how do people grow a pair in business? What is your best advice?
Well, if you're going to be an entrepreneur and you want to grow a pair, then you have to start at least preparing. I'm always amazed at the people said, I just went into this business. And I get hundreds of emails. Wear me down sometimes. They don't wear me down because I'm happy to answer, and everybody gets an answer. But they wear me down because people do the dumbest stuff. They said, I sold out, I quit my job, and I decided to lease purchase this dry cleaning business, and now I'm not doing very well. And I always say, so what did you do in advance to study dry cleaners and what it took to be successful? How many successful dry cleaners did you go out and talk to and learn from? And no matter what, how many business books have you read? Have you taken any business courses? Who's doing your books? Who's doing your marketing? Are you waiting only for traffic to walk in the door? You ask people questions like that when they become entrepreneurs, they don't have any answers. Here's the problem. We've told people to follow their bliss and find their passion. That's the dumbest, stupidest idea we have ever perpetuated in society. Do not follow your bliss. That's ignorant. And don't
I'm
do
listening.
What you're passionate about. Do what
I'm listening
you're
to your
good
tone.
At.
I hear your words, but I'm listening to the tone, and it's
I just get so sick of it. Follow your bliss. Oh, yeah, right. Follow your bliss and stay broke. That's why don't they just go ahead and say that? So, instead, don't follow your bliss. Do some research. Figure out where your talents are and where your interests are. Figure out if you can make a living doing this. You can be blissful and broke, or you could be somewhat bored and make a lot of good money because you've done your research and prepared yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You've done your family a disservice if you have followed your bliss and now you can't support them.
Right, right.
That's what really being selfish is. I'm incredibly happy following my bliss. Now, I don't have enough money to send my kids to college, and I'm having trouble with the mortgage, but I'm happy and I'm blissful. Stupid thing.
And my wife hates me
because
we have no groceries.
My grow a pair for entrepreneurs. Prepare yourself.
Right.
Make sure that you know what you're talking about. No, make sure you know what you're doing. Read some books.
And talk with people. Listen, I'm a great one for getting into mentorships or masterminds. And I'm not saying follow the leader blindly, but it is a great idea to bounce your ideas off of other people, listen, and then form your own opinion. But it's difficult, Larry, to work in a vacuum. Believe me, I've tried it. I always
well,
thought
watch
I was
what other people successful
room.
Are doing and then repeat what they're doing
right.
in a different and unique way. It's what you said, you
exactly.
have people watch what I do.
I do.
And I watch what everybody does. I mean, I watch television shows and say, where's the nugget in there that I could relate to my business? Everything that I come in contact with, every time I see a good business practice, no matter who's doing it, I can figure out a way to make that business practice relate to my business in some way.
So basically, you're always thinking in the corner of your mind or even actively about business, business, business. Which, let's face it, is what it is our lifestyle. I mean, I work alone. I live alone. I'm always here alone. I'm like you. I'm always looking for what I can do to incorporate into my business or my social media or my mentor groups to make it better. Always. That's just
well,
the way
I think
my
that's
brain
because
works.
You have real clarity. I have clarity about who I am, about my brand, about my point of view, and about what I do for a living. That clarity allows me to see things in more focus and how it will apply to my business and my brand and what I talk about, my point of view, all that sort of thing. People who are trying, you know, my buddy Joe Calloway, his new book, and everybody ought to buy that book too. Be the best at what matters most. You know, everybody's trying to be the great at so many things, and he's saying you'll never be great at everything. What matters most? What matters most to your customers? And what matters most to me is not what matters most to you or to somebody else. But be the best at what matters most. Figure out what that is. You just have to be better than your competitors and these idiots out there, the new agers who say, we don't have any competition. Oh, my God, yes, you do. Even if they don't buy, that not buying is your competition.
Right.
So we live in a very competitive marketplace more than ever before. There are more people doing what you do for a less price and probably doing it better than in the history of our world.
Yep.
And I don't care what it is you do. So what can you do? What matters most that you can do better? People don't like to answer those questions because they go, I don't know, I'm just going to keep on doing what I have been doing. Well, then you're going to keep on getting what you've been getting.
That's right. How's that working out for you? And you're right. I mean, listen, I'm very, very good at what I do, but I never go to bed without having learned or mastered something new that day. I just don't dare.
Yep.
Even if it's something I already knew that might have changed and I need to kind of brush up on it, I cannot go to sleep. My brain will not rest until I can, you know, go over what did I do today? What did I accomplish? What's going on tomorrow? Okay, tomorrow I'm going to dominate the world. That's my plan every night when I go to sleep. But every night when I'm kind of reviewing my day, what did I learn that was new today? And that has to be the last thought in my head.
Mm-hmm.
because if I didn't learn something new or brush up on something that I already knew, I wasted my day as far as I'm concerned.
No, I agree with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, clarity. This is something I think is native to both of us, but can that be taught, Larry? Is there any way people can learn to go deep?
I think you can teach people to just slough off all the things that don't matter so much. I really believe it comes from being clear, one, about what you really want most.
Mm-hmm.
Once you know what you really want most, you just sort of assess, and I believe everybody gets out of their brain and out of their thoughts and onto paper. You start writing down all the things that you do, all the activities that are taking up your time and taking up your day. And then you ask yourself really tough questions, and you say, does this activity, regardless of whether it's making me money, regardless of whether I enjoy doing it or whatever, is it really moving me closer to where I really want to be? If it is, then do it. If it isn't in any way, dump it. And you know, like I had a guy that worked for me for years and years and years, and his background that he had been a horticulturist and a landscaper and so forth, and he always said that the best landscaping tool was a chainsaw.
Oh,
I thought about that for
out.
A long time. It's true, and all of us need to take more chainsaws to our business and to our activities and understand that most of what occupies your time doesn't move you closer to where you want to be.
So you have to go from clarity to discipline, and discipline is difficult for a lot of people.
Well, it is. I've never personally understood that.
Me either.
Because I am so clear about what I want. I know what I want my life to look like. And so anything that doesn't move me closer to where I want to be, I would consider that stupid, and I stop doing it. And it just is that simple. My whys are stronger than my hows and my whats. So I've got a very strong why I want my life to look the way it does. And that why keeps me focused. Most people aren't that clear on that. And I think clarity brings about discipline. But it all comes down to what your priorities really are.
So have you been this way all of your life, Larry? Or is this something that kind of came to you as a result of, you know, some kind of catastrophic event in your life, or both?
Well,
I
was raised right.
Okay.
My mom and daddy always kept me very focused, and I did grow up in the country and so forth, and, you know, it didn't matter what you wanted to do or any of those things that were fun. The chicken still had to be fed. Nothing got in the way. So you had priorities. When you grow up in the country and you got livestock and all that stuff, there are priorities. You know, it doesn't matter what you as a parent want to do all day long. Your kids got to eat. So, you know, nothing gets in the way. Your kids got to eat. And so I've always grown up understanding that some things don't get to be put off. And I just was raised with some things don't get to be put off. And I became so clear, and maybe it's because I grew up poor and everything, I knew what I wanted my life to look like. I still know what I want my life to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing gets in the way of that. And when I lost everything and went from, you know, I grew up poor and I got rich, and then I went bankrupt, and then I became really rich, all of the ups and the downs and so forth always kept me very focused on what I wanted my life to look like. So I was always able to come right back to that every single time.
So when you had that, and I remember you telling me about that when, you know, AT&T, I think it was, divested, and, you know, that big old mess, and you went from owning a business to having no business practically in one day. I remember you telling me that you went out and you mowed your neighbor's lawns.
Yeah,
I mean, you didn't sit around and suck your thumb. Right. You didn't sit around and go, oh, geez, how do I get my unemployment?
Trim trees, mowed yards, did whatever it took to get by, because nothing was going to stand in my way. Nothing. Not my pride. That's one of the big problems we have right now in our country with people saying, well, I'm too good for that. Are you really too good for that? See, boy, nothing ticks me off more than that.
You're not
too good to do anything. If I had to spend the next 2 months saying, do you want fries with that, in order to take care of my family, I would do that. I wouldn't settle for it, but I would do it in the interim till I figured out what else I could do to make even more money. I'd do whatever it took. I wasn't too good to do anything. People get this attitude that it's not fair. We've already covered that.
Right.
And then they get into this, I deserve, and boy, that ticks me off. You don't deserve any more than what you got. And then they get into, yeah, I'm too good for.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Listen, if I were to lose my business today, I would be cleaning houses tomorrow. It's really that
yep.
simple. I'm very
Absolutely.
Good at cleaning. Yep. I can do a bang-up job of it. And once I'm, you know, where I need to be, then I'll go right back into business. So, yeah, I agree with you. Okay, grow a pair money. I think this is important because we're talking about success. We're talking about, you know, all kind of the underpinnings of your attitude, which to me leads to success. If you've got, who was it that used to say, Mary Kay Ash, maybe, if you've got stinking thinking, you're not going to get anywhere. And
yeah, that's an old Zig Ziglar line about stinking thinking.
Was it Zig Ziglar? Okay,
yeah,
stinking
that's his
thinking.
Old line about stinking thinking. Believe me, he worked enough with Mary Kay, though. I'm sure Mary Kay repeated it.
Possibly so. Or maybe it's Dolly Parton. I don't know. But, you know, that has always, somebody said that to me, and I went, oh, I like that. And it's always stuck with me. But if you have stinking thinking and you've got all the things that you just enumerated, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot. But then when you finally get past that, I think, how do you grow a pair in business? Because that's important to me. You know, as a small business owner and an entrepreneur, I have to draw lines in the sand practically every day, Larry. No, you cannot treat me like that. I won't do it to you. You don't do it to me. Yes, we can get this to you, but you sent it to me 5 minutes ago. I'll get it to you tomorrow. You know, things like that. There's small lines in the sand, but if I don't do it, I will be run over every day.
Yep. I don't draw lines in the sand. I draw mine in the concrete.
Ooh, there we go. Now we're talking.
I do.
Okay, so let's talk about
I think,
that.
Yeah, we sands can shift.
Mm.
Concrete lays there
Good
all
point.
The time. And so I draw my lines in the concrete. That's how it is. And when I give my word, I keep my word. I don't care what kind of hell I have to raise to make it happen. I don't break my word. I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
I had an appointment a couple of weeks ago with a sports guy. I had a sprain in my elbow, and they were going to do that, what's that called, kinesio tape or whatever, you know, and I didn't know whether it worked. But anyway, I had this appointment with this guy. And my appointment was at 2 o'clock. I was on a radio interview, and it ran long, and then there was an accident on the way, and I walked in, and I am never late. I believe 10 minutes early is late.
Mm-hmm.
I am never late.
Me either.
I walked in 5 minutes late to this thing. He looked up and said, well, good to see you. And I'd never met the guy, and I said, well, let's stop right here. First of all, I don't know how long this takes, but I'm 5 minutes late, and being late is inexcusable to me. I don't want you to do this for me. If you're going to have to run somebody else on the next appointment late to do that, I'll go ahead and pay you for today's appointment because I've taken up part of your time, and it was my fault I didn't get here on time. So let me pay you for today's appointment, and we will reschedule because nobody else is going to run late because of me, and I apologize for being here 5 minutes late. And he just sat looking at me astounded.
Mm-hmm.
He said, nobody has ever offered to pay me for my time when they were late. I said, well, they should.
They should, yes.
You know, I watch my wife have an appointment to get her nails done or to get her hair done, and she doesn't get in for 45 minutes late because the person before her got there 10 minutes late
mm-hmm.
and the person before her got there 5 minutes late, and so it gets, you know, it adds up and up and up and up until everybody's day is thrown off because people don't respect other people's time. So I've drawn those lines in the concrete that when I give my word, whether it's I'll be on time for this appointment or whether I give my word I'll show up or no matter what I give my word about, I won't compromise on that. And
mm-hmm.
I don't compromise when somebody else gives me their word. I just don't.
Right, right. And I don't blame you. You know, I'm glad you explained that the way you just did about your wife's appointments. I'm like you. I mean, well, there's two things that happen with me. Number one, I am terribly directionally impaired. I mean, remarkably so. The dentist will lead me out to the front door. I mean, they don't even let me wander around their corridors. It's bad. So I always leave. I always plug in, you know, my destination unless I know my destination to my nav system. And then me being me, I fight with her because she's not the boss of me and I get lost. So I always leave 15 to 20 to half, you know, maybe 30 minutes early. Because I will not be late. There has to have been a car on fire in front of me if I'm going to be late. I just hate it. I think it's arrogant. I think it's terrible. But what you just said really struck something with me because no matter where I'm going, whether I'm going to get my hair done, well, the dentist is not too bad about it, but typically when I walk into the hair salon, I always have to wait, and they offer me coffee, and you know, I've learned to take my Kindle with me. It never occurred to me, and I'll be honest with you, I've always just blamed it on the technician, quietly, you know, but it never occurred to me that she's probably just reacting to who's already messed up her day earlier in the day. Never.
Absolutely, that's the way it is. Yeah, I asked a doctor not long ago when they were running late. They said, well, the person in front of you was a half hour late. That's why you're running late. And I said, so why didn't you tell the person who was a half hour
come
late
back
that they had missed their appointment and to reschedule?
Right.
They said, well, you can't do
right
that. And I said, well, of course you can. So now I'm going to be my appointment's going to be late, and then the guy after me, his appointment is going to be late, all because you didn't have the guts to say to a person who was disrespectful of your time and my time and the person behind me's time, they were disrespectful,
mm-hmm,
and now we all suffer because you didn't say you need to reschedule. And they looked at me
good
like
point
I was an idiot.
Right, right. Listen, I'm like you. If I show up late, which almost never happens, I'll give them the option of canceling my appointment and I can come back.
Exactly.
But I've never offered to pay for it, so thank you for that. It never occurred to me. You
and
don't
see,
know what
people,
you don't know.
And this, people think these kind of conversations, oh, my God, Wingate's just hard to get along with or whatever. No. It's all
no
about growing a pair and standing up for yourself and standing up to others and holding the world accountable to a standard,
mm-hmm,
that we have let that standard erode. Now, people are going to think you're a jackass when you do it. I get that. I don't care. You know, I'm not a jackass about explaining it. I'll explain it in a very logical way, and if they get upset, well, that's their problem. I'm not upset. I don't scream. I don't yell.
Mm-hmm.
I don't make an ass of myself doing it. I just simply say, explain to me how this makes sense.
Right.
And I
right
get them to participate. And if they don't like it, that's fine. I can do business with someone else. But I think that we should all hold ourselves first. And that's why the very first thing in growing a pair, that's my very first technique, is you got to fix yourself first. It's
right
not right for you to go out and hold others to a higher standard when you're the one who has the low standard and that's the way you're living. So fix yourself first and then speak up for yourself and
mm-hmm
to others and then hold others accountable for their actions.
Yes, absolutely. One of my big pet peeves, and I think we've talked about this too, and it's in your book. I glanced at it earlier. When you walk into a store and people cannot be bothered, there may be two or three people milling around. You know they work there. They're wearing the little smocks. They don't acknowledge you. They don't say, can I help you? You're just there to give them your money when they can be bothered to amble over to the register. Larry, I'll be honest with you. I walk out. There is too much competition out there. I just leave. I turn around and I leave.
A woman wrote me the other day, and her question was, you know, Larry, it's not fair to those of us who want to shop with cash that stores give a discount on their goods if you use their credit card. How would you suggest I handle it? And I said, shop someplace else. I mean, really, it's that simple.
Yeah.
If it bothers you so much, shop someplace else. I don't care
right
what you're looking at. I can find it someplace else.
Go
now,
to Amazon.
That store has
seriously
every right. She was upset with the store. No, that store has every right to market their goods any way they want to. Don't get mad at the store. Actually, it's a very smart idea. Use our credit card. We'll make more money if you charge it and you pay it off for the next 3 years at 22% interest. It makes
right
a lot of sense for us to give you 10% discount today, because we're going to make hundreds of dollars on it
mm-hmm
over time. But so it's not the fault of the store. It's the fault that you don't have the guts to say, I don't need this from you that bad. I'm walking out.
Right. And I do it not real often. Well, one time I walked in, it's just a little Dollar General or something, and this girl behind the counter was so rude. She was chomping on her gum. I was already in the store. I was already unloading onto the little counter. And I was so fed up with her that I just put everything back into my little buggy and parked it and walked out. And
yep
then I called the store and told them why I walked out. Yeah, I said, listen,
well, see, that's
it's not going to do
you
any
good.
Well,
that most people won't do.
Well,
you
they
spoke
needed to
up
know
about
why
it.
Yeah. It's, you know, I can walk out and they can go, oh, what set her off? But if they don't know what was so egregious to me, they're not going to take steps to correct it. They may not have anyway, but they need to know. And you don't, and like you said, you don't need to be nasty or argumentative. I was very calm. I related what I witnessed this girl doing and my reaction to it. And I said, listen, if I walk into that store and I see that same girl with her nasty attitude and that snapping gum, I'll walk out again. It's just that simple. And there's, okay, well, thank you. We didn't know that. Well, if you bring your butt out of the back room where you're smoking a cigarette and drinking coffee.
Look at it from a customer's perspective.
That's right. You know, experience the customer's, you know, what the customer's experiencing at their hands. You'd have a lot better store.
And, you know, really, that's kind of what the whole grow a pair thing is all about. It's about an awareness of what you will and will not put up with yourself and others. And I just wrote this book to increase people's awareness and then give them some tactics for increasing their ability to be courageous and learn how to stand up for themselves and to others. Teach them how to set a higher moral code within themselves and how to act in a business situation with their money, with their family, every area of life and business. We all need to grow a pair.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the reason I wrote the book, and I hope people are able to read it and learn from it and go out and live better lives. And I guarantee you, if you grow a pair and know what you believe in and stand for, your life will improve.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. One of my favorite chapters, Larry, is carry yourself like you have a pair. And you don't have to be a girl or a boy. You can be, and you talk about your wife, and I love that whole chapter. You know, so talk about that if you don't mind.
Well, you know, I can see little kids in wheelchairs who still carry themselves with confidence and courage. It doesn't matter how small you are. I can show you, and everybody has got a great aunt or a grandma who's 85 years old and weighs 85 pounds, and nobody messes with her.
I had her.
Yeah, nobody messes with her because she just looks like she's got a pair. And see, and that's the whole thing. I took a little heat over the title Grow a Pair, which, by the way, is the reason I gave it that title.
I know.
But Grow a Pair is not about what's going on between your legs. It's about what's going on between your ears. And learning to carry yourself with confidence and look like you are on purpose instead of wandering through life and stumbling around through life, it makes a huge difference.
It does. And it really people will not approach you with ulterior motives if you look like you're just not going to play. Now, if you look like you're wandering around and you're a victim, guess what's going to happen?
Yeah, years ago I was in New York City with a buddy, and it was really the first time I'd ever been to New York City, and we were just typical tourists looking at the big buildings. This was 30 years ago and 35 years ago, and we were wandering along until we kind of looked around and said, well, I'm not sure this is the best neighborhood. And then I saw, well, there's a little old lady over there by herself carrying her grocery bag, and there's this little guy over there, and this cop walked up to the two of us and said, you guys need to go someplace else.
Right.
This isn't the place you should be. And I said, really? Well, look at that little woman over there. She's all by herself, and, I mean, she's not in any danger or anything. He said, she looks like she belongs here and knows where she's going.
Mm,
and I went,
good
oh,
point.
That's a good lesson. I don't look like I belong here, and I don't look like I know where I'm going.
Right.
I'm not carrying myself with purpose. Good lesson.
It is a good lesson. I had a similar situation. I was wandering around Atlanta, Georgia on the MARTA, and I'm not paying any attention at all, and I wound up in the Martin Luther King station. I was the only white person in there, and it didn't bother me. But somebody came up to me and said, do you belong here? And I said, nope, I really don't. How do I get out? And they very kindly pointed me because I'm directionally impaired. And they very kindly took me to the correct, spot of the thing and said, get on there now. I said, okay, bye, thank you. But I wasn't worried about it until somebody said, you probably shouldn't be here. I was like, not a problem. But they were very kind and, got me where
sure.
I needed to be.
Sure.
But, I didn't look like a victim. I'm just wandering around having a good old time. So nobody really accosted me. And I really think it's because people just don't, as a rule. I tend to know that I'm not going to tolerate it very well. I think that comes off of me somehow.
Well, I think that we all sort of put off this energy based on our level of self-confidence and how courageous we are and whether we have a pair or not. We put that energy off. I can see it when somebody walks in a room, so can you. That's why some people do well on stage and some people don't do well on stage. They're almost apologetic in their presence. You know, I've discovered that you can say the dumbest stuff, and if you say it with enough confidence, people will love you for it.
I know. Or you can do it in a soft, sweet southern tone.
There you go, too.
I'll be 5 miles down the road before they say, what did she say? I'm gone.
Exactly.
But, Larry, listen, thank you so much for being with me here today. I love chatting with you, and I'm
a huge
fan of you. And you know,
I appreciate
always,
it. Tell everybody buy that book, and everybody have a great holiday and a good new year.
Well, listen, I'm putting out my top 10 books for 2013, business books that I think are mandatory reading. Bad word, but I think they should be read by everybody who is in business. And Grow a Pair is on there. And so
is
Joe Calloway's book. So he doesn't know that yet, but he's going to be on there as well.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
Thanks again for having me so much. I do appreciate it.
Oh, Larry, you are welcome anytime. And Merry Christmas to you and yours, and thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Listen, everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour, and I wish you a wonderful Christmas and a fantastic new year that will bring you continued success, good business, good health, and happiness. Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.